Right, okay. Some of your comments coming in this morning, and it's a really busy morning for it. Thank you so very much indeed. 30 billion excess should be dished out to people in poverty. Greg, we borrowed money, 270 billion. How can we do this? The government and people spend beyond their means. This is where the issues lies. We need to pay our government's debt first. Well, we don't really. That's on the long finger. They're writing some of that down. Every country in the world has a ton of debt. Yes, we have loads of it, but really, write that debt down. And I mean, let's face it, it was probably mismanagement that drove that debt up in the first place. But write that debt down, not write it down, pay it down, whilst people have to go to food banks to eat. Really, is that where we want to be at? These people aren't living beyond their means. They aren't burning the candle at both ends. They don't have the money to feed their kids or to heat their house, and they're working as well. I find a lot of these families availing of the food banks are often wearing the best designer gear and they continue to smoke and drink. Why should I fund their lifestyle when they don't cover the basics themselves and prefer to continue spending on unnecessary items in their life? Well, I respect everyone's point of view, but you're quite literally just doing the government's work there or the agency's work there in turning on each other rather than supporting one another. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but the people we're talking about and the ladies I was speaking to, the people they deal with, are not those type of people. Right, OK, we're going to keep going with that conversation as well. But first, I want to welcome into studio Brendan Devenny, presenter of the DL Debate podcast. And it's a busy one, a lot to reflect on in terms of Donegal football, hurling, and of course the Ulster final. Where do you want to start? You're the boss. It's your.
No problem. I'm the boss. Am I?
Well, it's your podcast, isn't it? Yeah,
and at the moment, I'd say you are. But yeah,
go on.
Saturday evening, I was up at Cavan, Breffni Park, to see Donegal Miners. You heard of the phrase, you know, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. Well, this is certainly one of those tales. Greg, a very low scoring game. Cavan hitting a couple of goals midway through the second half and game was over, basically 6 points up. There wasn't a chance of a comeback. Donegal's comeback started, I think, 3 or 4 minutes before the end, and it didn't seem possible. Somehow they pulled back, they got a goal and a couple of points, and Shane Killahan then come up and hit the winner. You'd have thought it was going to extra time. He hits the winner, thankfully, because you're way up in Breffni as well, so I get extra time. No, come on. Good lad, Shane. So listen, epic stuff. Oisin Scanlon from Unions here at Palm, the goal that brought Donegal back into it. And listen, phenomenal performance from him, young lad Danny Brown. Come on, sub had a couple of points, vital moments in the game. And Dara Hennigan had the equaliser in normal time from centre-half back. So real spirited stuff from the lads. This was the first do-or-die championship game for Miners, and it sets up a mouth-watering one with Derry next week. Derry, of course, are the standard-bearers at this age group this season, Greg. So a difficult proposition, but certainly great heart shown from our lads, and fantastic to see.
Brilliant. Yeah, Luke Barrett's on, the manager.
Luke Barrett. I got a chat to him after the match. Greg will play that this evening. As you were saying, there are hurlers won again. Conleith Gilligan's on to talk about the Ulster final, another epic game in Clonus. What a build-up to a game, what a week, Greg. And then,
I know.
You know, what a match. So it was a very, very strange week in terms of listen, outside of football, you know, the build-up did and everything that happened. I suppose the football was kind of irrelevant in terms of that subject and the allegations were put forward. So very, very strange week. But the game itself, Greg, I suppose, was complete all-out counter-attack.
Exciting, wasn't it?
It still was exciting. I suppose we were learning to live with the counter-attack element, and there's more, I suppose, adventure from the teams. It's not just defence and then we'll maybe break forward. There's purpose to attack. There still is exciting scores in it, but certainly the game itself, going right down the wire and penalties. People say about penalties, but there's no time in this season for anything else. Like, the game had to be done and dusted, and of course Derry keeper Lynch was a hero, saving a couple of spot kicks. And
he did well, didn't he?
McFall, of course, the backstory of Kieran McFall coming back after his whole controversy in America and that, and being back in the squad. He played 20 minutes the last day. He hits the actual one in penalty. So wee bit of storybook stuff in the end for the Derry lads.
Yeah, and how far will they go? Or can they go?
They're genuine All-Ireland contenders, you'd have to say.
They would be.
I think... people keep looking at maybe Dublin game in the league. You know, they got their defence right, but Dublin opened them up second half, and then it's a league game. Like, it's hard to tell, but certainly if you're playing them in the championship now, there's nobody would say they would definitely beat them.
No, yeah.
They are. I think you got to say Kerry are first. After that, you're saying Galway are sitting in behind them. Galway, Dublin, Mayo, Derry, just maybe slightly after that. So they're in the mix. You know, we've yet to see what the throne men will bring this championship. And
yeah, indeed. And also, too, we've yet to see what Donegal comes out with next in the first game of the new All-Ireland series away to Clare. Colin McFadden's going to be on the show, as you mentioned. It'll be interesting to get his views in relation to that. What's your views, though? We don't know,
yeah,
do we?
I mean, injuries. Obviously, the McBurtie long-term one. I hear he's back training a bit, but to be ready for a championship game, I'd say he's probably running straight lines. Greg, obviously... Big McGee had an injury. Langan was injured. Pádraig Mógán was injured. I was chatting to a fella, seen Pádraig Mógán the other week at a golf classic, and he was still in crutches. So I don't know if any of these lads are going to be back. Greg, we would desperately need them back, because Clare are decent side. I know Kerry gave him a walloping, but in the Munster final, but
that's
Kerry.
Levels, though, isn't it?
That can happen. I mean, Clare made the quarter finals there last year, the All Ireland. I mean, they're a kind of plucky, hardened kind of championship side, particularly down in Ennis. So that's actually a real difficult assignment for us from the get going. After that, you're going to be playing Derry's in our group as well, of course. They'll not be holding back. So you have Monaghan then after that as well. So, you know, many people's probably looking at surviving.
Are we
in some
the
way.
Whipping boys of the group?
I hate to say it, Greg, but I mean, if you're looking at other teams, I mean, certainly, Derry and Monaghan are a different level to us just currently. So how we even stay in those games will be interesting to see. I mean, we obviously can have a go at Clare, but I reckon Clare at home, I mean, they'll fancy their chances against us, particularly with those injuries as well, Greg. It's a real difficult time for Donegal GAA.
And you mentioned the hurling too, not resting on the laurels. I think the management team realised that they have to make some... changes if they're going to compete as they would want to in the final.
Yeah, I'm loving the headline from Mickey McCann here. We're not happy, you know, with the performance, even though they won 2-20 to 4-7. Maybe it's a goals he's talking about. Maybe they've conceded in that, but Donegal hurlers are flying. You know, we interviewed Joe Boyle there last week. Did a great live story with him, and the three live stories have been brilliant. Greg, you know, Nadine Doherty, and then Colin McFadden, and then Joe Boyle going across the three sports, you know. And
just a reminder for people out there too, these are podcasts, by the way, so if you hear Brendan mention those live story chats, they're available for you to listen back on our listen back section of the website as well. They're there and archived forever, which is great. Okay, so it's a cracking show, busy one. It's live after the news at 7 p.m. and then of course it's a pod thereafter on highlandradio.com. You have to plug something as well.
I'm down in Mulroy College tomorrow first,
right.
for a wee presentation. They've invited me down, so which is nice.
Nice.
I'll tell all the students what not to do.
What a better man than yourself.
What I did at their age. I was just thinking the night you're on a bit, Greg, is funny because it's St. Union's, you know, college, right. So they're calling it a night of legends, and then, as I said, I'm stuck in the middle of them. So there is some proper legends there, as in Michael Murphy.
You're a legend yourself.
Colin
as well.
McFadden, yeah. Rory Kavanagh, Big Neil Geller, all ex-Bass students, you know, which is interesting. Because
there's not many have done what you've done across different codes and sports and stuff, Brendan.
I had a volatile time.
But it's not to be sniffed at.
Listen, it's funny. Listen, time moves on, and if you can help it. But there's a big night, Thursday night in Mount Argyll. I think it's thrown in at half 7, Greg. I think there's 500 tickets sold already.
Brilliant.
So yeah, it's a fundraiser just to keep the facilities at the college running over.
Be a good night, that one.
So it's nice, nice to go back. My son's going there next year, Greg. So I think he'll have a different time than me. He's a bit calmer than I was at
well, give him a chance. It's early days, Brent.
You never know.
Right, okay, listen, so that's the DL debate, 7 after 7 tonight. Reaction to the minor victory, sounds like a cracking game as well. The hurlers, the Ulster final, and also looking forward to Donegal v Clare. Guests include Luke Barrett and Colin McFadden. Right, that's after 7, all right, very much. Thank you very much indeed. And you can listen to the DL debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's in Letterkenny. Yes, Greg, I availed of a bereavement counsellor who was based in St. Connell's when my partner passed some years ago. Tell that lady to phone St. Connell's and see if he's still available. I appreciate you helping out. Any other suggestions? Someone's looking for sort of a group set up, preferably, to deal with a bereavement. There are specific ones for people who are bereaved by suicide or have lost a child, but they're looking for a general one, if you could put it like that. Absolutely agree with Margaret. As a working parent, we are always left behind. Respect to everyone, and not about working being non-working, but specific to parents who work this summer again. I will pay a fortune for childcare to hold on to my job. Friends who don't work are entitled to free childcare and summer camps. No back to school allowance for us either. And that is not fair. That is not equitable or equal. A caller says the A5 needs upgraded, but the Manor roundabout to Lifford Road is terrible. Not wide enough, dangerous bends, pedestrians using it for walking. The list goes on. I had a near miss with a pedestrian. I can only imagine how many more there have been. But that is part of 10T, isn't it? Which is supposed to interlink then with the A5 if it all gets moved along. The A5 needs upgraded, but I've just read that one, I beg your pardon. Excuse me, please. I was wondering, could you put this out? The water is off in Kincraigie, Manor Cunningham, Saturday, Sunday from about 12 noon to 7, but Irish Water had no idea about it. It's like someone had it off without telling people. It burnt out my shower due to low pressure. It happens a lot out here. I just can't see why we pay house tax, not have to buy a new shower, and now have to buy a new shower. No one knows nothing. Someone playing with it. We've contacted Ishke Aaron for comment there. But you know what we were talking about? The life bills that come at you. There's a perfect example. If you're struggling to feed your family and through no fault of your own, your electric shower burns out, you know, dependent on what type of shower you're getting, you're going to have to find, you know, anything from 80 to 350 euro. Okay, this Monday's focus is the discussion of the revival of the skill of thatching with the opening of the first ever thatching school in Donegal. Conall Shovlin is a committee member of the Dolman Leisure Centre and Master Thatcher, and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Conall. Thanks for joining us.
Greg, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm not a master thatcher, but I'm just a big promoter of this project for the last 20 years, you know.
Do you thatch, Conall?
No, but the townland that I live in, like when I was a child, there were 12 houses in it, and there were 10 of them thatched, wow, including my house, you know, wow, and the house that I was born in. That's the only one that's left now with a thatched roof on it. So the thatched roof was a huge part of the landscape of Donegal and every other county, indeed, in Ireland, and there were songs written about it, and tourism was marketed on and everything. But unfortunately, because of change in lifestyles, you know, they are becoming very, very more or less extinct, and what we have left, we really need to preserve them.
Yeah,
now, there
for
was
sure.
Was a course here, and the Ardra Parish Council over 40 years ago, through FAS, they conducted a thatch training program. And our house is one of the houses that was done that time as for working experience for young thatchers. But they were all in their 20s at them now, and that's way over 40 years ago. So it shows that that the thatchers are getting older, and they want to hand on their skills to younger people. And the only way it can be done is looking at it in a way like that you have a thatching school where you have master thatchers there, and you have the different types of roofs there, whether it's reed thatching or traditional to Donegal is straw thatching and flax thatching and rye thatching and rope thatching. So you do all these types of thatching with the master thatcher, and he trains the young people from the county, you know. And then we're looking at some houses here even, you know, that are closed, that there might be, there were typically three-roomed cottages and maybe there's one room down, but to try to do work study on these to repair them.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole country, because they're, you know, the Derling Building Grant, you know, people might be interested in looking at that, you know, and getting them fixed. And because we don't realise it, but those thatched houses might have taken 2 or 3 years to build with the stone, gathering up all the stone on the ground and quarrying it and trying to get it with primitive equipment to the site. And they had no cement. They had to do their own shell for the lime, and they had to mix that to build the house. And then they had to go to the bog and lift the timber and slice it for the roof. The old bog further was there for tens of thousands of years, and they put bog on top of that, then they put the thatch on top of that. So look at it's an artist, it's like a painting. I mean, these thatched houses, you could toss one of them at 5 minutes on the machine, but to repair them, and what's even there is might have taken, even a derelict thatch house, what's there might have taken 2 years to do.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And there is a shortage then of thatchers. You're saying that the current crew of thatchers might be getting a little bit older and perhaps want to hand the tradition over to a new group of individuals. But do you think it's something someone could make a full-time living from, thatching, if they were to train up on it?
There's a great scarcity of thatchers, and every county, I mean, I was down and visit the folk park down in Killarney. They have a big folk park there in Killarney National Park, and they have all the thatched houses there. And they have to get people in from Poland to thatch the houses.
Wow.
And a lot of this material also is coming from abroad, but we can grow a lot of this material. And Donegal is not the worst. There's a good lot of thatchers left here yet, and you know, they do want to hand on the skill. But the great thing about the thatching school is that, independent of weather and health and safety, you can work around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can train, and then you can go out and do work study out the country, like to repair some of these houses, as was done 40 years ago.
Yeah, and one of the problems that we're seeing, and the reason also why we are seeing problems with, you know, we're seeing less thatched houses, is insurance as well. I mean, that's an issue we covered quite extensively on this program over the last couple of years, in that people are struggling to get house insurance with a thatched roof, and obviously then, God forbid, if a fire were to happen, it leaves them stuck.
Yeah. Well, what we're trying to do is to incorporate all these things into a new era, a new dawn, maybe, for the thatch houses, you know, to address these issues. And this is just the first part of it, because, you know, it'll take a lot of work, but it's a heritage that's well worth preserving, because tourists and everything come and they like to see these houses and they like to stay in them, and it could offer an alternative income for a small holding that they maybe have a thatched one-bedroom thatched house on, that they could have it for rented to visitors and people like that from Europe to come and experience that.
Okay, so where is the school located, and is it up and running and recruiting at the moment?
It's going to be built on the site of the Dolman Centre in Kiltlunai.
Yes.
But we're very fortunate. We've been working with Donegal Local Development, the leader programme, the Letterkenny and Donegal Town Office. And the great thing about Donegal Local Development, they take on local ideas. And we've been working now this last 2 years on this local idea, and we're very lucky to secure the funding of $175,000 for the building. And so we've signed that contract now, and we expect to start it, and we expect to have it open in October. And look, we're inviting not only people from Donegal, but people from Northern Ireland and different people to come. And we feel that we have the only training facility in the country for it. And trainers can come from different counties and work with their own trainees, and the trainees in Donegal, or work with the thatchers that we have here in Donegal. So, and then to try to preserve, if we cannot preserve the thatched houses that are already there, you know, we won't be a success. So we're looking at earmarking a few houses in the area that could do with repairs, and go out and do work study on them, and at the same time do walk inside and on.
Really, it makes a lot of sense.
The type of thatching.
You gave a timeline there. You've been working on this for a couple of years, but you had this idea for a thatching school for a couple of decades, though, haven't you, Conal? This is not something that you've just...
Yeah, well, we started the Nairnport Nurse Bed Community Co-op in 95, and we wanted part of our program that was a thatching school, but there were so many things to be done that and different things. And the fact that I had a thatched house then myself, I had a great interest in it, and I was very friendly with Master Thatcher that lives beside me here, and he had a great interest in it as well. So he, myself and him, discussed ideas so many times, but it's only now, you have to stick with these things a long time, you know. And it's coming now, and hopefully we can make a success of it, and that we've thought everything out well, and that the country will be behind it as well. You know, all the different, the Heritage Office and Donegal County Council are very good in supporting us, but we hope that the Heritage Offices in counties like Galway and Kerry, with a lot of thatch houses, will also work with us in sending trainees and people to carry on the skill in their own county, because it's the only thatch school in the country. It's for training, because you do have to do all the different training, health and safety now, and everything. It was different to 40
course,
years ago.
Yeah. I know in Inishowen there's a still a good concentration of thatched homes Where do we rank, I suppose, county-wise across the country, Conal, in terms of still retaining thatched houses?
I think it's very good, Donegal, because the Heritage Office in Donegal came up with this idea of thatch repair grants a number of years ago. So it was to help houses maybe that had fallen into a bit repair to keep them going and keep them thatched, you know. And it's a very successful scheme, and other counties have taken on that scheme as well. So as I said earlier, these houses, when I look at them now and the ruins of them, some of them where I saw them as a child, I mean, the people that built these houses, as I said, it might have taken them 2 or 3 years when they hadn't even a tractor, a horse and cart that they were doing by hand and they'd build it. It's a pity to just let it disappear because it says there were so many songs written about it in the homes in Donegal, and there's always a fire in the kitchen, a kettle in the boil. It's a huge part of
our heritage
in Donegal.
Yeah, for sure. And when it's gone, it's gone. You know, that's it. And we try and retain heritage, don't we, from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Well, we have living heritage now, houses that are lived in. We don't want to lose that, because in the next 2 or 3 generations, everyone will be talking about, well, where's all the thatched houses gone and what happened here and what happened? You know what I mean? We have an opportunity now.
We definitely have an opportunity. Houses that we know, most of them are no more than 60 years old in Donegal, you know, and there's a great progress to make it. But also, I mean, the farmers in Donegal can grow oats, and they can grow rye, and they can grow flax. That's happening currently, you know.
Yeah.
And that means that a lot of the materials can be sourced locally in the county, you know.
Okay, listen.
And,
I was going to say,
the trainees. There'll be trainees that'll like this very much. I have no doubt. It's just getting the people to come, and I think we will have a lot of people anxious to come to do it, because when people look at a thatched house, they've done, it's like a creation, it's like an artist or a painter. They look at it and say, look at that, you know.
Okay. Well, keep us updated on progress, Conal. Well done for getting it this far.
And thanks again. Thanks again to Donegal Local Development, and thanks to yourselves also for always giving us time and space to promote these projects.
All right. Take care of yourself, Conal. Conal Shufflin there, committee member of the Dolman Leisure Centre. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by businessman, former presidential candidate as well, of course, Peter Casey. And Peter, when I was speaking to you really not that long ago about your plans to develop accommodation for Ukrainian refugees in Bonkrana, I didn't anticipate that I'd be speaking to you so soon again with like really quite severe damage done to the property. Thursday night it happened, is that correct? Hello, Peter, can you hear me? No, okay, I'll tell you, I know what I have to do here. I'll get Peter back in now in just a moment. Just to remind you of the text line, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and text to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000, just whilst I re-establish a connection to Peter Casey. And don't forget, you can watch this interview and the whole show whenever you like on our website, highlandradio.com, or on our social medias. Okay, just whilst I wait to reconnect with Peter, a caller says, I was parked at the Cathedral car park area and saw a boy coming up the road alone by himself. He was about 5 years of age and walked into school. I thought this was complete neglect, and I didn't know whether should I be worried. Should I have done something, maybe go to the school? I don't want to make a fuss, but as a parent, I can't stop thinking about this. I was very concerned, but I made sure he got into the school gates okay, right? I can understand where your concern might come from, but I'm not sure what was happening there. Okay. Let us see. Can I speak to Peter Casey now? Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning, Greg.
Sorry about that. I had a slight issue on my side. Yeah, I was saying just as I was introducing you, I didn't think I'd be chatting to you again so soon about this property that you're developing in Bonkrana under these circumstances, but you're of the opinion it was deliberately targeted on Thursday night.
Well, I'm not of the opinion it was.
Right. What happened?
They broke in and they used diesel to set fire to it, you know.
And had you had any warnings that something like this might happen, or did this come completely out of the blue? Was there any threats delivered in your direction?
There was no threats. I had people send me, you know, emails and texts, which were handing over to the guards, of course, you know, saying, you know, that they were objecting to it, saying that it was going to be used as for asylum seekers. I've made it very clear that the centre was always going to be for Ukrainian families, you know. So, it's very, it's just very sad and disappointing that that this sort of thing happens, you know.
You have no doubt that this was targeted because of your plans to house Ukrainian refugees in this not-for-profit project.
I don't have any doubt whatsoever. You know, I mean, it used to be an old people's home. You know, so I think if I was going to open it up as an old people's home, I doubt if it would have been firebombed. You know,
yeah.
So yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, I've made it very clear. My position is that people that come to Ireland illegally, you know, I don't think the Irish government has the responsibility to support and house and provide benefits to people who come to Ireland illegally. But I think that I've also made it very clear, my position is that, you know, Putin cannot be allowed to win. And, you know, people have been forced to flee their home in Ukraine. Their whole cities have been just wiped out, devastated, you know. And, you know, if Putin were allowed to win, he'd control 45% of the world's wheat supply. You know, so I've made it very clear. My position is that I think Ireland is doing the right thing by supporting Ukraine.
How much damage was caused in the first instance? Have you been able to assess that yet, Peter?
I haven't. I'm actually, I'm over in America. My daughter is graduating this weekend. So I was over in America for my daughter's graduation from in Charleston, you know, so my... the youngest of my five is off the payroll, which is a lovely position to be in, you know. Okay. I found out about it on Friday morning when I got contacted. So the guards had been there, and the fire brigade had been there. It's just very... very angry at the moment about it, Greg, to be quite honest.
What do you do next? Does this sort of invigorate you more to proceed with this? Has it discouraged you? Or
absolutely. You don't let bullies win, you know. You can't allow bullies to win. So, you know, absolutely, we will make it the best centre for Ukrainian refugees in Ireland, you know. So you just can't allow bullies to win, you know.
How are you going to ensure that the premises isn't targeted again?
You know, we'll take measures to make sure that it's protected, you know. So that's all you can do.
Yeah, we don't know who's responsible or where they might be from, but you say whoever is responsible for this don't represent the good people of Donegal.
I think everybody knows that, you know. I think the majority of people in Donegal, you know, are supportive of the tragedy that's happening in Ukraine. And I think that it's a very sad reflection that a couple of sick people can do stuff like this that just reflect badly, you know. And it doesn't reflect on the people in Donegal. This is just a couple of sickles that need to be caught. We are going to offer a 10,000 euro reward, you know, to anybody who gives information to the guards leading to the arrest of these people, you know. So you know, if we can get some information that will lead to conviction, we will be offering a 10,000 euro reward, you know. So and you know, hopefully that will bring some information that'll be useful for the guards.
All right. How far long has this delayed the opening of this centre at this point? Well, it's probably too early to determine that, Peter, is it?
It is, you know, Greg. You know, I mean, it's just, I mean, you saw the news at the information at the weekend that the tourist industry is going to be losing €1 billion in, you know, in revenue as a result of hotels being forced to, you know, accommodate people, you know. So, I mean, this is affecting the economy big time, you know, because we're a tourist economy. A large part of our income comes from tourism. Obviously, our major income, of course, comes from American multinationals. But, you know, tourism is a big part of what Ireland is all about. And, you know, we need to have our hotels up and running and to provide the tourist industry the boost that it needs. And we're entering the tourist season now, of course, you know. So it's just, oh, I get so angry when I just think about how a couple of sickles were able to, you know, affect literally the lives of an awful lot of people, not just the people that we were going to be accommodating in the centre, Greg, but the tourist industry is going to be impacted, and the jobs that provides and the incomes that provides, you know, is going to be impacted as well, you know.
All right, Peter Casey, thanks for your time this morning. Have a good day. Take care. That is Peter Casey there, businessman, former presidential candidate, speaking after it appears. He's certain that people entered the premises in Buncrana, the former old peace person's home, doused it in diesel, set it alight, and now a €10,000 reward is being offered for information which leads to arrest and conviction. A caller says the biggest issues with many of the undocumented are they have no papers and are claiming to be of an age that they certainly are not. Many are much older than they claim, but he's, I'm not a spokesperson for Peter Casey, but he's clear that this was not for Ukrainian refugees. They do come with documents and what have you. This is for they. He is not into mass immigration, it seems, that listener is referring to. Another caller says, I agree with Peter. The damage to the property is outrageous. My parents live in the area and there is a natural fear. I lived in another country and I saw what was happening when undocumented were brought into the area. There were issues with rape, robberies and abuse. There are genuine cases, but a lot of the undocumented are here because they have cash to make the journey, they say. So no great sympathy coming in as of yet. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Well done to these people for what they are doing. They put the government... This is the food banks, by the way, sorry. Well done to these people for what they are doing. They put the government to shame. It's the same all over the country. The government should be doing it, but sure, they live in another world from us. There's certainly different lanes in this country, that there are those that are very well off. There are those that are comfortable, and then there are those, the working poor, so to speak, and then those that are very much disadvantaged. There's not a great deal of equality in how all this money, constantly being told how rich the country is, and yet we have hundreds and hundreds of hundreds and hundreds of families that are having to make decisions as to what they spend their money on, whether it's food or fuel, whether it's period products or pasta. You know, I mean, that is the reality that we're hearing. Right. OK, the root of the problem for many is not budgeting. Yes, any advice welcome, but soaring electricity bills, huge increases in shopping bills and no financial support for working parents. Example, back to school allowance or paid parental leave means as a working parent, you were almost trapped in a job. It doesn't pay us to work, but mortgages were based on two incomes. Family income support would do a lot of homeowners unable to make ends meet and on these times. Money was available during COVID to support everyone. The teenager with a weekend job in a restaurant got the same financial support as a parent with bills to pay. Now, no money to support working parents. Credit to Margaret and her group, but shame on our government leaving working parents in this situation. Our Ukrainian friends are better off, no disrespect to them, but if funding is available to support them, as it rightly is, then working parents should be financially supported. Of course, there's enough money for everyone. I'm sure a lot of the families that we're talking about now would not want to move into a hotel room and live their life out of it. So I understand the point you're making, but there's no competition here. There's absolutely enough money to go around. That's what we're being told, and we're supposed to go, well done everyone for making us really, really rich. We'll spend it on the people that need it. That's what people want. Okay, welcome back to the programme, and we welcome onto the programme now Anne Fox, Secretary of the Donegal branch of the Parkinson's Association of Ireland. Thanks for joining us, Anne. Good to speak to you.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, we're going to talk about the No Barriers Foundation. It's at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. It's a not-for-profit organisation. What's it for and who is it for?
It provides exercise classes, strengthening classes for people with disabilities. We use it for our patients with Parkinson's.
And talk to me about the benefits of exercise for someone with Parkinson's.
Parkinson's patients have mobility, balance, and balance problems, Greg, and it tends to allow them that they fall, that they would fall, have a lot of falls. And if exercise is recommended very highly for people with Parkinson's for their balance, for strength training, for mobility.
Mm-hmm. So it makes sense, though. So if you can strengthen those muscles as best you can, it helps you as much as is possible with certain people counter those effects so that you can keep active and moving.
Absolutely. They would recommend about 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous exercise per week if it can be done. And as a support group, we provide exercise classes, yoga classes to our members to help them get through as much exercise as they possibly can.
Yeah, okay. So when did this all start for you, Anne? When did you take an interest in this?
I suppose I'm involved with Parkinson's now for about 25 years. Greg, I knew people up here who had Parkinson's and there seemed to have been no support or no help out there for them. So we started up a support group and it has grown from that. And now we cover the whole of the Northwest, Sligo, Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim.
Yeah, there were huge gaps going back that long, I imagine. And I mean, it's always trying to get more and to fill more gaps. But I can imagine there was very, very little support going back those couple of decades.
Practically none at that stage. But, I mean, none that I could even find, Greg. You know what I mean? We had a head office in Dublin and they provided me with something, but there was nothing locally. So therefore, we started our own support group up here.
Right, so the free gym class takes place, as I say, at the No Barriers Foundation at the Mountaintop. It's in Letterkenny, as I mentioned, and it's on Thursdays at 3 p.m. Everyone, I imagine, who has Parkinson's is welcome. So,
absolutely.
Is it? I mean, obviously, Parkinson's a progressive illness. I presume the sooner you start physical activity or specific types of training, the better. Am I correct?
Yes, for sure, Greg. The sooner you start a program of exercise, the better it is for yourself. And it's to strengthen, as I say, your muscles, to give you good mobility. And it does prevent a lot of falls. And that's one of the things Parkinson's patients will say, that they fall a lot. And then sometimes the fall can be very severe and they can end up in hospital.
And obviously, you know, people's posture might be affected by Parkinson's and you know, muscle stiffness is another part of this. Does exercise, has it been proven in any way to slow some of that progression or what do we know, you know, the proper targeting exercise, what do we know its benefits can be?
It does tend to slow a certain amount, Greg, but it keeps them active and then rigidity is a big problem.
Yeah.
So the more exercise they do, the better it is for them.
And with any serious illness, of course, it has its physical impacts and it has its mental impacts as well. And we know the benefits of, in the first instance, exercise, but also, meeting other people.
Absolutely. That is a big part of it, that social side, the cup of coffee, the cup of tea afterwards, and meeting people like yourself. And, you know, they will always say, God, it's good to talk to others who have the condition.
Yeah. So talk to me for someone who might want to go, but it's a little bit nervous as to how everything unfolds. So if they want to roll up on a Thursday at 3 p.m. for the first time, what happens and how do you get involved and what do you need to wear? And just to in case it alleviates anyone's nervousness that might be out there, Anne.
Yeah, well, the program is designed specifically for people living with Parkinson's, Greg. Now, if they roll up on a Thursday at 3 p.m, the No Barriers people will do an assessment of the individual and then design the program for their needs.
Excellent.
And it's very easy going. I've been up each Thursday to meet with my own members that are attending, and you know, the people up there are extremely, extremely good. And they really cater for each. I mean, I have one lady who attends who's in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And she can still partake very actively in the class.
Okay, so that induction, and then it's designed it's designed then for each individual. Do people tend to bring someone with them, or attend alone, Anne, or is there a?
Some do attend alone, Greg. Some bring people with them. I mean, there's space there for you to sit and observe if you so wish.
Good.
I mean, sometimes you're coming for the first time, you might like to have somebody with you just to make you feel comfortable, and that's not a problem, like.
Good.
And I go up every Thursday just to meet with the people before they start.
And I presume, too, you learn exercises that you can continue outside of these gym sessions as well. I presume it's better if people can sort of try and maintain these activities a couple of times a week or whatever, but I presume there's guidance offered at the gym in relation to that, too.
Yes, it's a mix of exercises. Some with some of the machines that are up there, others are designed that you can do at home.
Excellent. And do you see an increase in people's confidence, Anne, once they sort of partake in this type of activity?
Oh, absolutely. They just love it, and most of them say they can't wait now for next week.
Brilliant. That's what you want to hear, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, Greg, yes.
All right, returning customers always a good thing. It's like returning listeners. it's all positive.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Well, the best of luck with it going forward, Anne, and all the excellent work that the Donegal branch of the Parkinson's Association of Ireland do. And hopefully you're already really popular, and hopefully you have an increased turnout off the back of this interview. And thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Greg. Thank you. And if anybody wants to contact me about it, Greg, they can get me on 086-160-5847.
And we'll retain that number here because people will know our numbers off the top of their heads, and we can pass that on. Thank you, Anne. Anne Fox, Secretary of the Donegal branch of the Parkinson's Association of Ireland. So that's a special gym session at the No Barriers Foundation at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. It's a special gym session for people with Parkinson's disease every Thursday at 3 p.m. and everybody is welcome. And if it's something you're interested in, but you had any fears about it, hopefully Anne's answers to some of those questions would allay those, so you can get along there and get involved. Let's get to some of your comments here. Hi, Greg. I wonder how much money these patients get back from their treatment abroad. I had treatment in Derry. It cost me €627 and I got €178 back. But I'm not complaining because the treatment worked and I only had to wait 2 weeks after my doctor referred me. And that was a common problem and is a common problem. And we spoke to the Ombudsman not so long ago about their focus in that area. And hopefully things are going to improve in terms of how you claim back monies and the money matching your expectations and so on and so forth. In terms of surgeries abroad, I think the number is no more stark than how many people have died getting the operations. I know a good few who went and came back grand. The majority do. That's what I was not sure of. I mean, of course, one death is one death too many, but there was no context to the figures in terms of 6 reported deaths, but how many people travelled abroad, and if those surgeries were done in this country, because all surgery carries some level of risk, what would the mortality rate be there? I think for context and for good information, that information would be useful. The hubcap off a vintage car was lost in and around the Letterkenny area in the last week. If you found it, we have a number here. So it's the hubcap of a vintage car. So it's going to look different to presumably, you know, one of the plastic ones that you see around the place, around roundabouts and what have you. I can imagine this is part of a set and valuable. So if you found a hubcap off a vintage car in and around Letterkenny over the last week, please get in touch with us and we'll pass on the number of its owner to you. Hi, Greg. Just feel the need to put a positive note in there for the ED at Letterkenny University Hospital. I attended there last Thursday with my son with quite a serious complication. The staff were absolutely fantastic and right on the case. The place was packed as usual, but we had bloods, an IV line, a CT scan completed between 9 p.m. and 4 a.m. So very well done to all the staff at the ED. And I hope your son's fully recovered and back out. And good to hear. Greg, don't know how I feel about National Bike Week. Once again, it doesn't apply to rural Donegal. I hear the ads. I'm not sure of the ins and outs of it. Perhaps I might have a look into that a little later on. Right, okay, that's an update on the zebra crossing. I think I read that one out last week. How does Connell Square promoting industrial wind turbines with thatched cottages? Not sure the connection there, but I think I understand where you're coming from. A caller is a firefighter in the retained firefighters in Letterkenny and only receives a paycheck every 3 months. This is unacceptable since they are then taxed more and have to claim it back at the end of the year. Also, they're never off the clock. They could be at home with the family or at a function and get a phone call which needs to be responded to straight away. They do amazing work. There's a thatched cottage still occupied in the middle of Letterkenny. Good. I mean, there are still plenty of thatched cottages lived in and some in urban areas as well, no doubt. Great win for Derry in the football after the week they had. Donegal should take a leaf out of their books. Well done to them. Indeed, and it looked for big spells of that game that the chance had gone, the opportunity had been missed. But just when everyone was saying that they had no legs left, back they came. Caller works as a school bus escort and does not get paid over the holiday periods and has to sign on for those periods. Sent in the paperwork for the Easter period a week before Good Friday to the social welfare office and still have not received money for the Easter holiday period. When she called them last week, they informed her that they didn't know when she would receive her money as they were very busy. Is there any advice that can be provided here? It's a toughie, and unfortunately you're in a cohort and a group of people that caretakers... some school secretaries, I've spoken to dozens of them over the years, who find themselves in the same position, and you have to reapply, don't you, for every break. It's not like it happens automatically. You have to apply for Easter, then you have to apply for summer. But anyway, this school bus escort still hasn't received her social welfare or his social welfare payments for the Easter holidays, doesn't know when the money is going to come through. Is there any advice from anyone out there that could assist them? I don't think any of us could afford to survive without money that we have come to rely on. Yes, I agree. There is no help for the working parents, this listener says, just those on social welfare. We've seen that in the budget and that theme will continue. It is such a shame. That being said, Leo Varadkar did say that he wanted the budget that will be announced later this year to focus on the working families. The squeezed middle, so to speak. So we shall see what comes of that. I don't think a fiver a week is going to cut the mustard. They need to come up with something more significant. Peter Casey says, this listener unfortunately has no control who's housed in his building. He has used the whole "I blame the government" statement, and the residents do believe he will hand over the building and it will house unvetted males. And then he will just say, I gave it to the government for Ukrainians and they filled it with non-Ukrainians. He was asked to sign a contract to ensure he'd fill it with Ukrainians, but declined. Well, I can only go by what he said, and I asked him specifically in a previous conversation, has he got an arrangement to house Ukrainians? And he said yes. And he was very specific about that and has been quite vocal about these unvetted males that people reference, that he wants it for Ukrainians. It's beside an old people's home, and if the fire had have taken hold, what about them people? And they're critical, very critical of those who are responsible. It's beside an old... I've just read that one, sorry. Greg, the whole of Ukraine is not war-torn because people are going to holiday parts there and there's no war. Ukrainians that are here have gone back on holidays, so who's telling the truth or lies? Well, listen, there's Russians are bombing all parts of Ukraine at the moment. I'll tell you what Russia actually did on Saturday. They actually bombed, for the first time, the town the Ukrainian Eurovision entrance was were from. Okay, brief chat with John Clendenin, President of the Vintners Association of Ireland, off the back of a new survey which shows the majority of its members are confident about the future of their bars despite the spiralling cost of energy, insurance and other operating expenses. John, did the findings of this survey come as any surprise to you? It's positive.
It came as a pleasant surprise, I'd say, Greg. But just to put it in perspective, you know, we've got over 3,500 publicans across the country. There was a significant engagement with members in relation to the survey. And some of the findings showed that 70% of those that responded were positive. They saw increases in turnover, they saw a profit and their outlook was strong for the future. I think it's important to note that, you know, based on license bans across the country for publicans with 7-day licenses, 50% of them would have a turnover of less than 190,000. So, you know, it is a good it is good news. It's good to see, considering particularly what we dealt with in March 23 with the pandemic and all the uncertainty and disruption that that caused, that, you know, a lot of publicans would have took the opportunity to, you know, reinvest in their business, reinvent their business, introduce innovation, new products, new offerings. And, you know, for many, that has been rewarded with, you know, customer interest and people returning to the pubs once they've been able to do so.
Yeah, but finally and briefly, this does not mean that the likes of the extension of the 9% VAT rate is required to keep these businesses in business.
Well, the 9% VAT rate is related to food and accommodation. It's not related into drink sales. And I think it's important to note, you know, that rate is 23%, and it will likely remain at 23%. Mm-hmm. But with the 9%, it really is a stimulus for businesses. And as I said, like, we're talking 190,000 as the turnover, the max turnover for 50% of publicans. So
yeah,
it's we're not exactly talking big numbers here.
Okay.
And I think it's important to recognise that, you know, the government supports that were in place, whether it be COVID, whether it be true energy challenges, or the likes of VAT hospitality rates of 9%, they are all acting as stimulus to the economy.
Okay.
And to the sector. And I think they're very much needed to ensure that we see continued growth right across every village and town in rural Ireland in particular, that is in trading as a pub.
All right, John, listen, thank you so much for your time. We'll speak again, of course. John Clendenin there, President of the Vintners Federation of Ireland. Have a lovely day. Chat to you tomorrow at 9.